This episode of No Quarter is sponsored by the Underground Retrocade. You love these games, and the way you want to play them is on the original cabinets. You want to see the side art, you want to feel the controls, and you want to hear Prince on the stereo. So when you're in the Chicago area, head over to the Underground Retrocade, where with a pocket full of quarters, you can party like it's 1999. The Underground Retrocade, 121 West Main Street, West Dundee, Illinois. I'm Rob O'Hara.
And I'm Mike McGinnis.
And this is No Quarter Podcast. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well, Rob. Welcome back. This is the second show that you've been on.
I know. I feel like last time was a fluke, but this is it. Like, we're really doing this.
Yeah, now you're stuck. I gotcha. No escape for you.
There, I saw a lot of feedback from people on Facebook and on Twitter. People were really happy to see the show continue. I'm really happy to see the show continue. I'm happy to be a part of it. And one of the feedbacks that I saw that really, you know, you every now and then you get those that really boost your ego, you know, that just really make you feel good.
Right.
And I saw one and it said, "Who the hell is Rob O'Hara?"
Awesome.
And it's funny because
you
and I know each other, and of course Carrington, I mean, we've all crossed paths in podcasting and online and stuff, but I guess I didn't really like, I should have brought my resume on that first show, you know what I mean? So,
well, it's sort of weird because we've talked about you and your shows quite a bit in the past. So you would think that somebody would go, "I wonder who they're talking about."
I know, I write all the time. I would write on. Now I'm going to still write the show.
I'm still going to send letters in. "Dear Rob, I hate that Rob guy."
Exactly. I'm going to try to toss myself off the show and replace myself. Like, I don't know. It's kind of, it gets into weird Inception levels, but for anybody that was wondering, I grew up playing computer games and video games. I was born in the early 70s, and so like a lot of you guys, I grew up, we did both. We did console games. I had Atari and Odyssey 2 and all that stuff, but we also had home computers really early, a TRS-80, and I did have an Apple, but fortunately, I was saved from that world. We got rid of that Apple II computer, and I got a Commodore 64, which is the greatest home computer of all time. I feel like I'm bringing that balance to the show. I know.
How dare you, sir.
I can't wait to start talking about home ports of games, and we can talk about the horrible or non-existent Apple ports of these games.
Yeah, there's that.
So as far as arcade games go, we had an arcade game in my house when I was growing up. My sister was really good at Tetris, and so we had my dad found Blocks, I believe. It's from Sega. It's a Tetris clone. And so we had that, like, in our garage, and I just grew up with an arcade game, and it was such a conversation piece. You know, people would come over, and, "Oh, my gosh, you have an arcade game," and it was this cool thing, and so when I moved out, I thought, well, that might, you know, I might want my own game. And so I bought your favorite game of all time, Elevator Action, which I found in a newspaper article or like a classifieds, you know, and and I got that, and it was such a cool thing. And then I found out about arcade auctions, and I started going to those, and I bought Mat Mania, which I know you guys covered on an earlier episode. And I found out that I could get games really inexpensively at arcade auctions. So I bought, I think I paid $25, maybe $35 for Mat Mania.
Wow.
And that's definitely a different time, you know, and that mid 90s where you didn't have the nostalgia bringing up the prices so much, and arcades were closing down and they were just dumping machines, you know. So I bought a game. And then I bought a couple more games, and eventually I had 30 arcade games. And I, wow. I had a, arcade set up in the backyard, this big building that we had put up. So I kind of jumped in with both feet into the arcade hobby. Now I will tell you that purchasing arcade games does not necessarily make you an expert on repairing them. or fixing them or maintaining them. And really it doesn't even make you that good at playing them. But I did really like owning them. And so we've since moved from that house, and I had to part with most of that collection. I have five or six machines left that are sitting out in the garage right now. But yeah, man, I'm arcade all the way, and I love No Quarter. I've been listening for a long time, and I find that shows like these, it's almost like an excuse to get together and play a game. Like, you know, a lot of us, we all have MAME on our computers, but you know, it just sits there in the background because we have other things to do. But then a show like this comes along and you know, you have the weekly game, and it just it's like an excuse to pull that out, dust it out, and play a new game every week. So I absolutely love it.
Well, that's why we started this, actually. I emailed Carrington and I said, Carrington, do you like to play arcade games? And he wrote back and said, why, yes, I do. And I wrote back and I said, do you want to talk about playing arcade games? And he said, why, yes, I do. And so that's kind of how we started it. And yeah, it's always easier to stick to something long-term, whether it's arcade games or exercise or diet or whatever, if you're doing it with somebody else. If it's just you and nobody's there to hold you accountable and to show up and say, where were you? Then it's easier to quit. So I figured this would be a good way for me to make sure that I got in my weekly allotment of gameplay and then some with Carrington and now with you, Rob.
Yeah, I agree with you. Once you have somebody accountable for, you know, or accountable to, I guess, to fire up those games once a week and play stuff. I just really like it. So now last week on the show, we neglected to mention a minor thing, which is that the show has a new URL. And has moved on iTunes. And I think all of our followers on Facebook and Twitter have the new feed. But the new website is noquarterpodcast.com. And it is, we've got links to the new feed on iTunes. I put the website or I put the feed on Stitcher. I don't know everybody says you have to put your show on Stitcher, but I never hear from people saying, thank God you put your show on Stitcher. So I don't know.
I do a couple of other podcasts, and if I find I found that if when I didn't put them on Stitcher, people complained. I need this on Stitcher, so I think the benefit is entirely for the listeners because it allows them to stream wherever they are, and they don't have to wait for the file to download and transfer to their device, which is nice. But I don't know that it provides any benefit at all for podcasters. Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, it's easy. You just give them your feed and that's, I think, pretty much it. I know that Nerdist actually was on there for a while, and that network, they dropped off of Stitcher because they found that Stitcher was putting their own ads on the show and making revenue for it. Now, for shows at our level, that's not really a problem because one, we don't run our own ads, and two, I don't think we're a big enough fish for Stitcher to be interested in wasting time putting ads on our show. But that is was a concern, and they ended up pulling the shows off of Stitcher.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that. So if you go to noquarterpodcast.com, you can find, if you haven't found it yet, the new iTunes link. There's a direct RSS feed if you want that, and a link to Stitcher Radio. Hopefully ad-free link to Stitcher Radio.
And feedback. If you want to send us feedback, you can send that to feedback@noquarterpodcast.com. That's if you're not on Facebook and using the feed over there. We're still on Twitter. That feed has not changed. We're still at No Quarter Show on Twitter. That's right, because we tried No Quarter Podcast, and it was one letter too long. So No Quarter Podcast didn't make sense. So it's No Quarter Show on Twitter. Or again, you can send us feedback directly by email, feedback@noquarterpodcast.com.
I collected some news articles for you this week, some arcades things. I brought some
news.
Stuff.
Okay.
I brought stuff to the show. It's like show and tell. You know what I mean? And this, it's all links that normally I would bore my wife with on the way home from work.
Yeah.
And she's like, thank goodness you're doing this show now, and I don't have to hear about this crap. But now you get to hear about this crap.
Well, we have such a sterling record for news reporting on this show.
Exactly. I need a news. We don't. Like when I start, maybe you could give me like a boop, 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 boop. You know, like a...
I'll find a sound effect for next time.
Perfect. That'd be great. I saw someone posting about Illumicade, which is a new company which is producing light-up tea molding. And I saw a picture of this, and it looks fantastic. It's on a Tron cabinet. So it's the tea molding that goes around the edge of an arcade cabinet, and it's exactly as advertised. It lights up, and it looks really good on that Tron cabinet. Now, I don't know how well that's going to look on other cabinets. Like if you have a Pac-Man machine, I'm assuming that the market for this is people building MAME cabinets.
Yeah.
It would have to be done kind of tastefully, I'm guessing. I don't know that I would want my cabinet just glowing all the time, but I don't know. On the Tron cabinet, it looks really cool. So if you want your cabinet to light up like a beacon in the night, where you wake up and it's...
In case you can't remember where you put it in your house and you need to find it at night.
You're like, where is that 300-pound chunk of wood
that's lit up and making noise over in the corner?
I do have an arcade cabinet in our dining room. I don't know if I mentioned that to you. It's a 60-in-1. It's like one of those multi-cade, knockoff PCBs or whatever. And the kids... love it. They like it because you turn it on and they'll play, a round or two of Donkey Kong or whatever. But my wife will tell you she has never not seen it. So she doesn't need the light-up T-molding to find it. She reminds me that I have put an arcade game in our kitchen every time that she walks past it. So I saw this week that Atari Game Over, I know you guys discussed that on a previous show, the documentary about those fine gentlemen that went out to the middle of Alamogordo, New Mexico, and dug in the landfill to find the old copies of E.T.
All right, sponsored by Microsoft, I think.
Yes, it was. It did. It was an Xbox or Microsoft exclusive, and then I think it went to some of the Hulu Plus, that it went to the pay streaming sites, but it is now on Netflix. So if you have Netflix streaming, you can watch Atari Game Over. I watched it this week. It's short. It's an hour long. I don't know. I didn't go back and listen. I think I remember you saying at the time that it didn't seem like it was that big of a mystery.
Well, not for people like you and I who kind of remember when that happened, reading in the newspapers and seeing on the news reports on television. But I guess there are people who... now who weren't there and didn't necessarily believe that this is, it's somehow become a bit of an urban legend. And so they went out to prove that this really took place.
Yeah. So they have, they've brought Howard Scott Warshaw, who programmed E.T. and he had an interesting point. He mentioned in the documentary that he is the only Atari programmer that every one of his games sold 1 million copies. Now he did three games, Yar's Revenge, which sold 1 million copies because it's a great game.
Yeah.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, which sold 1 million copies because, it's a good game. It was obviously, it pushed the boundaries of the Atari 2600, but also it was tied into a pretty popular movie. And then E.T., which sold 1 million copies. But when it got to that point, I thought, maybe sales don't correlate with quality of a game. Like you could sell 1 million of something that doesn't necessarily mean it's great. It's a short watch and it's on Netflix now. So if you're looking for something to watch during the week, that was good to go through.
You know, I think that if you really want a good Atari documentary, I would suggest Once Upon Atari, which is either a 4 or 5 part little mini series that you can purchase them, I think, by episode. They're about an hour a piece, and they're by, it's put together, I think, also by Howard Scott Warshaw. And it's, he interviews Nolan Bushnell and a lot of the programmers and designers who were working at Atari at the time. And I would recommend that over this thing, just because it's well, it's more interesting, at least to me, I think. Or if you're a reader, go get Atari Business is Fun.
Oh, I haven't read that. Is that good?
That's a really good book.
Okay. I have seen the Once Upon Atari, and you're right. It's very, very good. There was a while where it was hard to track down purchasing that, I think, but that's good that it's available.
Yeah, now you can just go to onceuponatari.com. You click on the episodes link or buy it now, and you can get one or get them all on DVD. I don't know if it's available. I think it's available as a digital download as well, but I know you can get the whole thing on DVD or whatever episode you are particularly interested in.
Nice, nice. Yeah. The last link I have for you this week is an arcade game price guide. Now, this apparently has been up for a little while, and this was put together by Exidy. And you may know Exidy. I think he is from, I know he's from your neck of the woods.
Yeah, Evil Exidy, I think.
That's him. He's up there. And in fact, I think you and I met him briefly when I came out to Denver for the Kong Off.
Right. He services all of the machines at the arcade where that took place.
Yeah. And so he has this put up this link, and there's a really interesting information at the beginning of this link. And it's hosted on arcadeclassics.com, but we'll put a link in the show notes so you can just go there and click on the link and get there. But he has a really good point where at the beginning of this list, he shows, oh gosh, six or seven different Tapper cabinets. And if you scroll through the list, they all look pretty similar. But what he does is he shows you, okay, this is what a restored cabinet looks like. This is a cabinet that's in really good condition. This is one that's in okay condition. This is one that, has some wear and tear. And so he shows the different prices, like, you know, this one's worth $2,000. This one's worth $1,200. This is, and like I said, when you scroll through the pictures, at first look, I was like, these all look the same. But once you start looking at the details, you can tell that there's a little bit. And that is something I see all the time. People online will say, I'm looking for a Ms. Pac-Man cabinet. Is this a good price? Well, is it falling apart? Is the paint faded? Has someone repainted it? Does it have the original artwork, the stenciled artwork on the side, or has someone replaced it with one of those reproduction stickers? How's the monitor? How's the buttons? And there's so many variables that you can't, it's like saying, you know, what's a 1980 Camaro worth? Well, does it run? does it have rust all the way through the floor pans, or is it completely restored? I mean, there's so many variables. So he does give that warning up front, but then he goes through and he has listed, gosh, hundreds of prices of arcade games, and he cites whether it's the collector price or whether it was on Craigslist or whether it was on eBay, you know, those sorts of things like that. But it kind of gives you a ballpark, because I think a lot of people that aren't in the hobby, they might want to purchase an arcade game, but they don't even know what the ballpark is. I mean, are you talking $500 or $5,000? And people just don't know. So this is a good resource for that, to just kind of give you a ballpark of what these things go for.
Nice.
You know, I mentioned that I used to go to a lot of arcade auctions. I still go sometimes, but I try to leave my wallet at home when yeah. I go.
Good for the marriage.
Yeah. And so I can tell you that prices are different, even what part of the country you're in. And just availability and popularity of a specific game, like Gauntlet. An original Gauntlet might sell more than Gauntlet 2. It just, you know, there's all different kinds of variables, but it is a really good link to go through and just if you want to see what some of these things sell for.
Definitely worth checking out. I do have one piece of news here that we were going to talk about back in March, and then we weren't around for a few weeks. So UC Davis has, or I guess had, an arcade. It had 38 video games, a lot of classic games, Pac-Man and Star Wars Deluxe and things like Star Wars Trilogy Deluxe and games like that. That arcade has closed.
Oh.
Unfortunately. Yeah. That they said that it just wasn't making money for them anymore. In 2006, for example, the gaming center, it says, brought in $210,665 in revenue. Last year, it only brought in $94,404, which that's like almost 10 years later, so that doesn't seem like a big deal to me. But then again, I kind of get sentimental about arcade games and probably am more tolerant of the bottom line, I guess, than a place like that. Anyway, there were 38 games in total. They've all been auctioned off. The place will reopen in 2017. It'll still be a gaming center, but they're going to replace the arcade games with flat screen TVs and gaming consoles.
Yeah, I went to the name escapes me now. There's an arcade down on Fremont Street in Vegas.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And we went there, and the arcade games were, it was all classics. I think they had around 30 machines, and that was really cool. But then at the tables, it was like that with flat screens and consoles there. And I just thought to myself at the time, I could be doing this at home. Like, right. I have a Nintendo, I have a Sega Genesis, I own these things. You know, I understand not everybody does, but to me, that part of going somewhere in public and then playing console games, I don't really get that. I mean, I'm not knocking people that enjoy that, but that particular model, I don't know that appeals to me. But the places that have, you know, the classic arcade games and stuff, that I really like. So that's really sad to hear that they didn't make it.
Yeah. This was at UC Davis, and I think the college social experience is probably a little bit different than what you get when you're an adult out in the real world. I think arcades have always been, at least partially, you know, part of the appeal of an arcade is the social experience and going and being with other people and hanging out and playing games. And kids these days, I think you still have the social experience where you go over to somebody's house and play Xbox or play Madden or whatever. So this actually, as I look at it on the surface, makes sense for what you would expect at a college campus like UC Davis.
You know, if you think, and I'm just doing this on the top of my head here, but if so at that college campus, let's say the average college student is 20 years old, That would mean they were born in 1995. So they may not have that, which, by the way, first of all, makes me feel really old.
Let's not point that out again, okay?
But, you know, they may not have that connection to the arcades like we have.
Exactly. So it looks like all 38 games were successfully auctioned off, though, which means they weren't thrown off a building or smashed or anything.
That's
like
good.
That. So that's
good. That's good. They should have given them to like an incentive. Like if you got good grades, like you come in and your report card is all straight A's. Well, there you go. You get a paperboy machine or whatever.
Now that would definitely be inspiration for me.
Exactly. So I think you kind of monitor the Twitter account. So did you have any feedback from the last show or any comments?
The thing about 140 characters is you can't really put a whole lot of feedback into that, especially if you're, you know, replying to somebody and you have to put their username in there as well. So we got a lot of yay, it's back, but nothing more substantial than that. So thank you all of you who encouraged us not to quit and are now happy to have us back. We're definitely happy to continue to do the show. But beyond that, I think the real feedback is probably going to be in email and in Facebook.
There was a lot of comments on Facebook, just like what you said, saying, welcoming me to the show. So thank you, everybody who said that, and saying that they were glad that the show was going on. I think I might have been the first person that said that, actually. So, so thanks to everybody on. There's a lot of interaction going on the Facebook page right now. So if you want to chime in about games or have comments about the show or anything like that, you can definitely do that there. There was one comment that jumped out at me from, I believe this is, and by the way, this will usher in, I may be continuing a tradition here, but we will definitely be starting the butchering of people's names because I never know how to pronounce people's names, but I believe this gentleman's name is Lim Cheen, and his comment, and this was at the end of about 50 comments about how everyone was glad to see the show come back. Lim says, good show, but the new icon sucks. And so I wanted to take responsibility for that. Now, you and I and Carrington, and actually I think it was Carrington's suggestion that as we transition the show, we have a new feed, we have a new URL, and that this would be a great time for an updated logo. And Carrington suggested a really good suggestion. He suggested that we come up with a quarter with a circle and a line through it, and that would represent no quarter. And so I put my third grade Photoshop skills to the that's, you know what, that's a good point. I should have got my my son's 13 and he's way better at Photoshop than I am. I should have drug him in for some assistance, but I put my skills to the test. I came up with a pretty good looking logo. In fact, I think you put it on Facebook, and then you went online and found out that there are many other people using the phrase no quarter that all have that same general idea,
right?
With a quarter, or, you know, with the circle and a slash through. I showed it to my wife. I said, "What do you think?" She said, "Oh, do you guys just talk about Ghostbusters?" I'm like, "No, it's not. It's not Ghostbusters. It's no quarter." I thought it was really good. It was a great suggestion, and I thought it turned out pretty good. But it turns out it wasn't super original. So, kind of at the last minute, we put together the new one, which it's kind of a blue theme, a Tron-esque kind of looking world or whatever. And I was really proud of. I used at least 18 different plug-in things on Photoshop. I got some glow. I got some drop shadow. Everything. I thought that was really good. And Lim Cheen let me know that that sucks. So I don't know that that's in the final state. We may it may be in flux for a while, but yeah, the icon is what it is. And then let's see. I got a there was a long comment from Sean Kelly O'Shea, which, by the way, if you respond and you have a name that's as Irish as I'm Robert Patrick O'Hara. So if you're Sean Kelly O'Shea, you are permanently unbanned from the show. You can never be banned. So if you are in the Irish gaming clan, then it's like a protective shield from the banhammer. So, right. And there were a lot of comments about the game, about Elevator Action 2, and he basically summed up a lot of things all in one response. So I thought his kind of hit on everybody's. He said, first, he enjoyed the first Return of No Quarter episode and that he thought it was great that Carrington came on for the opening as he felt that smooth the transition over. And I agree. We were lucky to get Carrington. I mean, not lucky. He obviously volunteered to come back on.
He stormed off the show and then he had to storm back onto the show so he could storm off the show again.
There's a lot of Skype magic going on and all that. I don't know. It's technology. I don't know how all that works. But first of all, so he said thanks for Carrington and all that. And again, you know, Carrington definitely gave us a hand on the technical back end, moving things over and all that. So everybody, so we definitely appreciate his help. The second thing he talked about was the game Elevator Action. He said it was something that he had never seen before and that he'd never seen the Taito F3 system in a cabinet anywhere. And then he mentioned that we were joking about the poor contractors that were working in the building that we got to shoot and set on fire with the fire bombs. And that reminded him of the scene in Clerks where they talk about the contractors on the second Death Star in Return of the Jedi.
That all got killed. Totally forgot about
that. And that was a good point that made me laugh because I did think, you know, what do they say? That history is always written by the victor, right? So in Elevator Action 2, from our perspective, we are people that are showing up trying to steal these plans. But in reality, these are all people that just went to work and suddenly somebody broke in and this guy that broke in is setting them on fire. So
it definitely shooting them and knocking down their building.
Right.
It's always fun to think about some of these arcade games, like from the other perspective. Like you're not driving back the invading force from Earth. You're the invader from Earth who's trying to take their property and their homeland. And they're just defending it.
Exactly. He also mentioned a little bit about dogs as being bad guys in games. Yeah. He pointed out Wolfenstein 3D, which I think probably everybody has history with, and that there's a glitch. He put a link to a YouTube video. There's a glitch where you can make the dogs invisible in that game, which I thought was interesting. So if your moral compass does not allow you to shoot a man's best friend in the game, you can make them invisible, which I believe you still have to shoot them. You just can't see them. So it's kind of putting your head in the sand on that particular issue. And then he did point out a computer game, Command and Conquer, Red Alert, where you could actually build dog kennels and produce dog attack units. And he had some pictures to that. So he thought that was a good place where dogs got their revenge in video games. And then finally, he did mention that he was glad that we finally put the pronunciation of Taito to rest. And then when we get to this
you
week's
say
game.
Potato? I say potato.
And now there's a whole new pronunciation thing we're going to get to on this week's game. So I think, are we ready to get to this week's game?
One thing real quick. I did have a few questions as to why we switched the feed on iTunes and didn't just put a pointer in the old one to our new RSS, which would allow listeners to continue to get episodes without having to subscribe to a new feed. And I'm not real clear on how iTunes does things in the background, but I believe it has to do with the fact that if we did it that way, Carrington would still have to provide maintenance and basically be the admin for the RSS feed, and he didn't want to do that, and we thought it would be just better to make a sort of a clean break there and start anew. So hopefully that wasn't too much of an inconvenience for anybody.
There was some comments on Facebook where people said, well, I still got the new episode on the old feed, and that's
true.
Yeah,
you got that one.
Right, and so that's what we did. We uploaded. In fact, if you look on the old feed, the Monster Feet feed has episode 126, and that will be the last episode that appears there, and it appears with the old artwork. And then the new feed, the same episode is over here with the new artwork. So it's kind of a bookend. It's the end of that collection and the beginning of hopefully at least another 125 episodes over here, or at least three.
and thank you also to Carrington for he has agreed to continue to keep the old archive up and online for the foreseeable future. So if you want to go back and listen to those old shows, they will be available to you over at monsterfeet.com/noquarter. And that's thanks to Carrington.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, so let's get to the game, shall we?
Let's go.
This week we're talking about 10-yard fight, and I think we had a bunch of people, I had a bunch of emails anyway from people who correctly guessed that that's the game that we were going to play. This is a football game. It was designed and released in Japan by IREM in 1983. Here in the United States, it was released by Taito. and I think it came out a little bit later, but it's the same game. Rob, you're from Oklahoma, and football is big in Oklahoma, so why don't you talk about it?
Oh, let's talk about this game. Well, and by the way, when I saw that it was from IREM, I was like, is it IREM? IREM?
Oh.
IREM? You know, and I thought, oh, God, here we go again. So. Another 100 episodes. So, I knew their name. They got their start in arcades with, they actually put out a Mahjong game in 1978. But they did a ton of games, Moon Patrol, Kung Fu Master, Kung Fu R-Type. So they were really in there, even if people don't recognize the name, because they licensed most other games to other companies. So this game was obviously licensed to Taito. This is a football game. It was described as, on arcadehistory.com, describes it as the first slightly realistic American football game. And so I will give it that. I will say it is slightly realistic. In this game, you are always on offense. So you never play defense. And the goal is you get one half of a game and you have to score a touchdown to continue the game to go to the second half. And you work your way through different levels. I believe you start with high school and then college and so on and so forth. And you try to get all the way to the Super Bowl. Let's see what else. It is a 9-on-9 football game, so I guess that makes it slightly realistic. So there is some truth in advertising there. You have two buttons. One is a forward pass button that also hikes the ball, and then there's a lateral pass. So you don't really call plays like in a lot of football games. You hike the ball, and you could either pass it to one of the guys on the side, or you can pass it forward, or you can do both. You can throw a lateral and then a forward pass. So many options for offense in this game. The goal is to continue to get first downs until you score. If you don't get a first down, then you get a 10-yard penalty. And if you throw an interception, which may have happened once or twice while playing this game, you get a 20-yard penalty. Gosh, let's see. What else is there to talk about? I guess we could talk about, as you're running, you will have, obviously, the defensive players trying to tackle you. And if they grab onto you, you can wiggle the joystick and break free from their tackles. You can do that 3 times per play. And then we have the scoring. A touchdown, I believe, starts at 6,000 points, and then it goes up as you work your way up through the ranks. You get 1,000 points for a forward pass, 1,000 points for an extra point kick. There, you get 3,000 if you run in the extra point. You get 50 points for every second you have the ball, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, this is one of the games where the points just kind of continue to roll upwards, and all you got to do is survive.
Yeah, yeah. And then there are points awarded for when you get a first down. If you get a first down from a first down, you get 1,000 points. If you do it from a second down, it's 500 points, and then 300, and then 100. So I also, we got to talk about the clock.
Before we move on to the clock, the points differ depending on the level of difficulty. So if you score a touchdown on high school, it's 5,000 points. On college, it's 6,000. Pro gets you 7,000 points. And if you're playing Super Bowl level, it's 8,000 points for a touchdown.
And you will earn it if you are able to score during the Super Bowl.
Right. It's not an easy game.
Yeah. So you're also playing against the clock. And the clock starts off in the early level. I think it starts off with 1 minute, but it counts down very quickly.
It's definitely accelerated, yeah.
And I guess, again, this falls under slightly realistic, that after you get tackled, the clock runs for like 3 or 4 more seconds. And it continues running for 3 or 4 more seconds even when you run out of bounds. So there's definitely some clock management tricks that you have to use in this game. But it does, and of course, as you progress in the game, first of all, you start off each half with the opponent kicking you the ball, and so you're running back. And so they kick further and further each round, and also you get less time each round. So it's definitely, if you were to somehow put this on a chart, it's just a steady increase. It goes all the way up this chart. It's just getting less time and further that you have to go until inevitably you don't make it.
And while you do have 9 players on your team, you don't actually control all of them. In fact, you only control whoever has the ball at the time, which of course makes sense. But the computer is usually pretty good at figuring out kind of the rest of it, but not always. Sometimes it makes really dumb decisions. You know, you're running down the field and your blocker will just step out of the way and let you get tackled. there's some weird stuff like that in the clock that, you know, it makes it feel like, I don't know, I don't want to say that it certainly doesn't feel like a beta or unfinished, but it maybe could have used a week or two of extra polish before they released it. I don't know.
I have a theory about this game, and that...
Oh, is it cheating?
Well, that too. But, you know, Irem is a Japanese company, yeah. And I got a feeling that maybe they didn't fully understand all the intricacies of American football.
Right.
When they program this game, there are a lot of things that just don't quite make sense. But I mean, it's still a fun game, but it's definitely not. I couldn't go as high as slightly. I might go moderately realistic, or would be below that, like marginally realistic.
Imagine if EA back then had made a cricket game and not really spent any time researching it.
Right. You're like, I think it involves sticks and crickets. Go.
Sort of baseball, sort of golf. I don't really know what I'm looking at here.
One of the most frustrating things, and this is common, I think, with games from that era is that you've tried to build a 3D world, but you have put it in a two-dimensional game. And so what I mean by that, I know that you guys, way back, you played Map Mania, which is a favorite game of mine. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of games like these 2D Double Dragon comes to mind, where when you are approaching an enemy and you're on the same plane, they're going to try to punch you and you're going to try to punch them. But if you move up 5 pixels, then they're like, where'd he go? You know, and then they come up and then you meet them with your fist. You're like, ha ha, you know, I gotcha. And Map Mania is the same way. I mean, the trick to getting high scores in Map Mania is to go right towards a person, move up 5 pixels and just start punching. And when you show up, your fist is there to meet them. Over and over in this game, I would go to pass the ball and then if there's anybody between you and the other person, they will intercept the ball. And so it doesn't really take into account that you would be throwing over the top of people or, you know, anything like that. And in fact, there were a few times where I threw the ball and I got intercepted by somebody that was behind me, like below me on the screen where, you know, a defender had come around. So I was ahead of them trying to throw the ball. And when I would throw it, because they were touching my feet, they would intercept the ball, which makes no sense.
That's a little odd. And can we talk about out of bounds here for just a minute too?
Let's talk about out of bounds.
So if you catch the ball and you're running up the side of the field, for example, and you have your blockers in formation around you, half the blockers will just be running alongside of you out of bounds.
The AI is really kind of wonky in this game, and but not for the defense, just for your guys. Your guys are clueless. The other guys, whoever the safety is on the defense, that guy should be up for Defender of the Year because
he is very good.
And very fast. He moves left and right very quickly. And so there are many times where I was about to throw a forward pass with a clear, and then you throw it and everything kind of slows down for a second. And boy, that guy would just zoom right over there and intercept it. And I don't know about you, but there were times I could recover from one interception. Now, remember, you're trying to go 100 yards minus whatever you ran back. And I want to talk about the run backs here in a minute. But so you have, 50, 60 yards, whatever, that you're trying to cover. An interception sets you back 20. So that is a good chunk. And I could usually overcome one interception, but not two. I don't think I ever recovered if I threw two interceptions.
Yeah, my experience lines up with that. You lose 10 yards. And remember, the clock is running, and it sort of ends up feeling like it's running the whole time because of those 3 or 4 second overruns every single play.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, you can overcome one. It's difficult, but you can do it. Two, forget about it. You're done.
Now, each half starts with you returning a punt. So what was your strategy when you tried to do that?
I just kind of ran up the middle as fast as I could until they tackled me. That got me a few yards every time. Not far. I guess it's possible to run it back for a touchdown. I never did, but
I did it one time on my high score game. I actually did it because that is worth 20,000 points.
Oh wow! Okay.
So there is one trick I learned a long time ago in this game, which is when you return the ball, you always want to try to move to the right. Or up and to the right because there are 9 defenders, there's the extra defender is on the left-hand side. You just can't see him yet, but he is coming. So if you run to the right, you have a little bit better shot. And then you just kind of, you're surrounded. Like you're running and you have all 8 of your guys around you, and you kind of use them to bump into the other guys, so they would get tied up, I guess.
I think that particular mechanic is probably true for most football games, where you just sort of huddle in, or you try to stay in the middle of your group of guys and use them as like a car fender or something like that. Now, having said all of that, all the weird kind of quirky, strange stuff about the game, it is a surprisingly nuanced experience considering how old the game is and how early it is in arcade football action games, this particular title was. there's a lot of tricks that you can do. You know, you can run the, if you're on the 5 yard line, you can do a quarterback sneak and rush right in for a touchdown and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff like that that really kind of makes it feel like, okay, yeah, I get that this is an old game and it's going to be a little bit weird, but it does sort of feel like I'm playing a football game.
Yeah. In fact, I would do, if I got anywhere near the goal line, like between 5 and 10 yards out from the goal line, what I would do is, I guess we should mention at the beginning of each play, you have one pass receiver that starts off in motion. He starts on the right-hand side, and he runs all the way from the right-hand side of the offensive line all the way to the left. So whenever you hike the ball is when he turns and starts heading downfield, and he more or less runs straight downfield. But if I was trying to do a quarterback sneak and run into the end zone, what I would do is wait until he got right in front of where I was, where the quarterback was, hike the ball, and then he would run up the middle. And so you kind of turn your one pass receiver into a blocker. and so the safety would basically run into that guy, and he would get tied up, and that would get me a few extra yards to be able to run up the middle.
There is some strategy here. It does feel like a game where, I mean, you can just throw yourself into it and have a good time, but if you take time and study it a little bit and pay attention to what's actually going on the field, you can really benefit and last a lot longer in the game. We talked about how it's basically a 60-minute football game on an accelerated clock, and if you reach the end of that, you move up to the next level and it gets harder, and the game continues. So you can really get deep into the game and by paying attention to what's going on, which is, it's easy to do because the colors on the field are bright and they're separated well. You can, I was never kind of wondering like what are my players and where are their players. I was never confused. You know, you've got 9 of your guys and 9 of their guys, and yet I was never like overwhelmed by all the movement on the screen. The sound is fun. You can hear the crowd and the whistle of the referee and the game noises. It's all really, really well done.
Yeah, that's a good point, is that, you know, for as many things on the screen at a time as there are, you have 18 people, I never once got confused as to who I was controlling or what was going on, you know, because all of the other players are one color. All of your guys, except for who has the ball, are another color. And so, you know, when you pass to another guy, he lights up or whatever. So there are lots of times in more modern football games where I feel like I'm doing best when I control somebody away from the action. In other words, you know, in EA Sports, like some of the NFL games or whatever, if there's going to be a pass play or something, then I will just be a linebacker and I'll be like, get out of the way. And I hope that the computer, because it's going to be way better than I was. But at no point in this game do you feel like you're not in control. You know, you always feel like you have the guy, you're doing something. So I do like that.
On the right hand of the side of the screen, maybe a little bit more than an eighth, there's a bar that shows you the clock time. It shows you where you are on the field and what your goal is. And that kind of really, I think, helps reinforce the sense that this is a game in progress and you need to keep up and keep moving forward. I like that across the 50-yard line, there's a big football helmet. Emblem on the field, just like, you know, if you were at a football stadium, there would be the emblem of the home team. I think that was nicely done. The ref kind of runs around and does his little symbols. There aren't really penalties. You know, there's no pass interference or things like that. So that does, it does take an element of strategy out of the game, but I think that's probably necessary in a situation like this where you just want good arcade action and you want to keep it moving forward. You don't have to worry about offsides and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. It's definitely, you know, from the, we'll talk about the cabinet here in a few minutes, but from the game itself, having the football player logo, it's tastefully, it's not over the top, but you get the feeling that it's a football game. You know, you have the green turf, you have the football helmet, you know, at the top, you have the one and that's the little details, like the one that's in the middle, you know, the 50-yard line, that logo that's on there. And the referees are a nice touch. Like you said, they come out and they announce when you get a touchdown or a first down, they'll come blow their whistle. So yeah, it's a good, it's not overdone, you know, but it, I guess I'd just say
this is not NFL Blitz.
Right. Yeah. It's not over the top like that. So now talked about having all these things on the field. What kind of hardware does this thing have to make all that happen?
Right. So none of that really lags or anything like that. And it's a nice smooth experience and the sound is great. And that's because the game is based on the IRM M52 hardware platform, which is not widely used. I think there were only four games that used it. There's this one, there's Moon Patrol, there's Traverse USA, and one called Tropical Angel. The hardware itself is, hey, this is the first time I get to do it right, Carrington. It is a Z80.
Yay! America!
That's America. At 3 megahertz or I think 4 megahertz, depending on the game. I think in this case, it's a 3 megahertz chip. It has an M6803, which I guess is 301, better than a 6502. 894.866 kilohertz. It uses two AY38910 sound chips at 894 kilohertz and two MSM5205s at 384 kilohertz. A lot of sound hardware there, and that's because there's a lot of sound going in the game. So it's colorful and bright. Like you said, it's the green turf and the white hash marks and the colors of the uniforms and the animations of the guys as they, you know, they have stances that they get down into before the ball is hiked. And when they're running, it looks like they're running, and everything about it just sort of feels like, yes, I'm watching a football game, or at least I know I'm playing football and not something else. I think it was well implemented. There's some areas that could have used some polish, but overall, I liked it. Rob, tell me about the cabinet.
Sure. Well, the cabinet, if you are familiar with this style, is basically the traditional Taito cabinet. So it looks like an average arcade cabinet. It's a little bit shorter than a lot of other cabinets, and the front part near the monitor almost has a curve on the side of the wood. So they're very recognizable if you see one. These cabinets were black, and I found pictures of original cabinets that had, some had black T-molding, like trim around the edge, and some had white. So I'm not sure if this came with black or white T-molding. I could tell you that if I owned one of these, I would probably replace that with green or something that would, complement some of the colors of the game just to make it pop a little bit.
The flyer actually shows the cabinet with the white T-molding.
Does it? Okay, yeah. So I've seen, like I said, I've seen some black and white on those. The marquee up at the top. Now, this is getting into Rob's ADD. Maybe not ADD, more OCD, I guess. But I noticed this right off the beginning that there are a couple of guys on the marquee. And there's a guy running to the right, and he is wearing a blue jersey with white pants and a white helmet. He's being chased by a defender who's wearing all white with a red helmet. Now, on the left-hand side, there's like this little blue monster. I don't know what he is there for. And then it says 10-yard fight in red, and you have these horizontal lines. You kind of have green on the bottom half, you know, to represent the field, and blue, and then it has the Taito logo. On the left-hand side, or not on the left-hand side, on the side art, you have two football players, and one has a blue jersey with a yellow helmet and yellow pants, which is not like the guy on the marquee. And the other guy is wearing a white jersey with a white helmet, but this time he has red pants. So it's like none of these people match up, which started bugging me a little bit. And then you have, this explains this, and it's kind of hard to find a picture of the side art of this game, but at the top of the side art, there's a big white helmet, and that little blue monster is like the mascot that's printed on the helmet. So that makes more sense as to why, because when I looked at the marquee, I'm like, what is this monster doing here? But apparently he's one of the logos for one of the teams. Then you have the control panel, which has two players. And then I started looking, like, well, this guy's got white jersey with blue stripes, and it just really started. I think all these things were developed like independently. Like somebody said, one team is red and white, and one's blue and white. Go, and nobody coordinated what the uniforms were going to look like. And then, of course, you have the bezel that goes around the monitor, and it has in the upper corners it has referees that are signaling touchdowns, which I thought that was kind of cool. And then you have that same helmet up at the top And then a player with another uniform. So pretty much if you have red or blue uniforms, you could get on this cabinet somewhere. It doesn't really matter what they look like. I did go through the manual a little bit that ships with this game. And there's not a lot of secrets in there, like strategy and stuff. But one thing that I thought was really interesting was I looked through all the dip switches that are available on this game. There's a whole bank of dip switches where you can change settings in the game. And of course, in MAME, you could go in and adjust these as well. There's a dip switch that controls the timer speed in between plays, which so you can speed up and slow down that timer. There is a dip switch for turning this into a tabletop type game. So it would flip the screen, you know, for player one or player two, if you were to put it in a tabletop cabinet. One thing that was interesting is there is a freeze picture mode. And if you turn this dip switch on, then the player two start button will freeze the game. I have no idea. I've never seen that. And I don't know why that would be a feature.
That's odd. It's
really odd. Like you would put that on and then you're like, Bill, I'm about to score. Come down here and watch this. You know,
maybe this was their version of instant replay or something.
That's a good point, you know, like a, what did they used to have on, and if like you make the call, you know,
right. Yeah.
so you could pause the game. There is a dip switch that changes the game into no hit mode. So I believe that just turns off the sprite detection,
okay,
which I thought was interesting.
No clip or something.
Yeah. And then finally there is a test mode, which a lot of games have. There are a lot of games that have test modes where you can go in and it will show you the sprites and things like that. But this also has an audio test mode where it will come up with a menu and it lists every sound effect in the game. And you can press the button and hear the crowd cheering or the whistles or, you know, any sound effect that's in there. So I thought that was kind of neat.
That's cool.
Yeah, so, I mean, it would have to be a pretty rainy day to go to sit around and say, oh, let's listen to the punk sound, right. You know?
Yeah.
but it is cool, you know, that stuff's in there.
I was reviewing my notes as you were talking about the cabinet here, and I found that I was never able to run the ball back for a touchdown on a punt, but I found that there are different defense formations as you're playing. The defense will line up in different formations, and there's a pass route that works for each one of them, I guess.
Yes.
I didn't play enough to get all of them down, but there were two or three where I would line up and I would see how defense was, and it was easy, like, okay, this is what I'm going to do this time. And that worked pretty consistently throughout the game. So I was able to run up the score a little bit that way. How did you do this week, Rob?
I think I did pretty good this time. Now, okay. I will tell you this. Okay. It would not surprise me if you beat me 95% of the games we play. But I feel like this is one that I'm pretty good at.
Okay.
I did get to the Super Bowl, and my final score was 113,800.
Ouch. Okay. Yeah, beat me pretty badly.
A lot of games, I would say 6 or 7 out of 10, I probably scored in the 30-40 range like that. But on this game, I also did, during the high school game, run back for a touchdown also.
The scores are all end in multiples of 100, just because of the way the scoring is done. I thought I did pretty well, obviously not nearly as well as you. I did 58,600 points.
That's a good score. That's a good score.
Well, this is a game that I don't remember. I'm sure I walked past it in the arcades, and I have some memories of seeing other people playing it. I had never played 10-yard fight before this week. So I think I did pretty well for not having played it. I'm not a sports guy. I don't watch sports. But fortunately, you don't have to be to enjoy this game anyway. It's a lot of fun. I mean, even for all the oddities and quirks and stuff that I look at and I think, man, it would have been so much better if they had just finished polishing it off. It's still a pretty fun game. I had a good time. I don't think I need a cabinet because it's just an 8-way joystick and a couple of buttons.
Right.
It plays just fine on your home computer. Heck, you don't even need a joystick for this. This will play fine with a keyboard if you're at work and you're bored or something. Yeah, it's a good game. I had a lot of fun playing it.
Yeah, I looked up the world record. The official record for this game was from Mike Macy from Salina, Kansas, who set the record in 1986.
Salina or Salina?
Oh, I don't know. All I know is that's where I hang a left to go to
more
Denver.
More pronunciation stuff.
The controversies never end, McGinnis.
That's right.
The high score, the current world record is 295,100 points, which is almost triple what I thought I did pretty good. So I think you'd have to roll through the Super Bowl. You probably have to get to it three times. Or does it just keep repeating the Super Bowl after you get there?
Yeah, I think that's the max you can score in the game.
Oh, really?
So if you look at the Twin Galaxies official scoreboard there and you put in 10-yard fight, that score is what Mike achieved at 100%. The other games are like 49% and 41%. I think there is 100% that you get, and that's like the max score. Nobody else has got that, it looks like. The next score down on the list is 146,800 points, and there are only three scores there, so I imagine they haven't had that many submissions. Mike got his on June 28th of 1986. The other two high scores were submitted in 1985, nothing since then. So while I think that the other two are probably beatable, I believe that 295,100 is probably the max you can score with the default settings.
What was the third place one? What was that score?
That was only 121,500.
I'm in that ballpark.
Woohoo! See?
I could be a champion. I feel I've been training my whole life for this. Actually, partially kidding, but I do feel like I've been training for a long time for this show because I had this game for the NES, which is strikingly similar to the arcade version. And then I'm sure you probably know that this was re-released as a PlayChoice 10 game. Yes. So there's a versus 10-yard fight as well. And they're all pretty similar, but the plays that you mentioned, the different patterns that work, all, you know, once you have played this long enough, you see where the defense is lined up and you're like, okay, this is a pass up the middle play. This is a run to the left play, and so on and so forth. And there are a few cases where your best choice is to run it out of bounds. And if you have more than, let's say, 20 yards to go for a touchdown, and you end up with one of those defenses where you're going to have to run and you know you're not going to get a lot of yardage, your best thing to do is to throw it and then run up, and then before you run out of time, run out of bounds. And so that way you'll get another down, you know. So there are, like you said, some little nuances to this game. I feel like I should pick my game. We're just going to play this game every week. I'm going to be the champion.
Hey, I'm great with that. I like this game enough to continue playing it in the future. I don't know if it'll be make my top 500 list of my top 10 games, but I enjoyed it. I think it's a great game. Now this you'd mentioned that it appeared on the NES. Of course, there was the PlayChoice Versus version of it. It showed up on the Famicom in Japan. It was ported to the Saturn and later on to the PlayStation. The only home computer that it showed up on, or this particular title showed up on, was the MSX, but it's a football game, so there are versions of this on pretty much every home computer out there, obviously by different makers and manufacturers. I was reading it. I guess the NES version allows you to play offense and defense. That's one big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Everything that I've read about the NES version is that it sucks. The reviews are pretty much universally negative on this.
Yeah, it's not as fast. It's not as the arcade version is definitely the way to go if you want to play this game. And I agree with you. I love this game. I've been playing this game for a long time. But I've run across this game for sale and I've never picked it up just because, like what you said, it's an 8-way joystick with 2 buttons. So it's definitely something that plays perfectly in MAME. And I will mention that on my computer upstairs, I have 2 or 3 computers around the house. I have MAME on all of them, so it just depends on, you know,
ooh,
what's
Mr.
going
Fancy.
On. They're everywhere. I'm just loaded with computers. Upstairs, I have an old, you remember the Gravis Pro game pads? I have one of those. So I'm using a thumb controller, like on a D-pad, you know.
Okay.
And I found it pretty difficult to shake off those defenders, because when a defender grabs you, you have to wiggle the joystick around in a circle or back and forth to shake loose. And I couldn't do that very well with the thumb. Now, I also have a control panel thing. I think like similar to what you have with a joystick and the buttons. And I found that a lot easier when playing this game to wiggle the joystick around and get free from those defenders. So.
The official guide or whatever says that you have to kind of, you have to do like a quick 360 with the joystick. So like wiggle in a circle. I found that, like you said, that works back and forth really quickly works. Or if you're playing it on a keyboard, just, you know, the left and right arrow keys or move left and right back and forth really quickly also. We'll shake them off. I could see where the D-pad would be a problem, though, because it has to register that full circle of motion there, which can be difficult with the thumb thing.
Yeah. So it definitely worked better with a joystick for me. I don't know that I tried it with a keyboard, but I could see that working, too.
One thing that I did want to mention that I forgot to when we were talking about the stats is that or the technical details is that it's a little bit odd because most of the games that we talk about, the screens refresh at 60 Hertz. This one, the screen refreshes at 57 Hertz, and I don't know what the difference would be. There, but it's a little bit slower refresh rate, and the color palette is odd. It's 528 colors for some reason.
That is weird. It's just a little bit off from the standard, huh?
Yeah, so I'm not sure what weird math voodoo is going on in the background there, but it's a little bit odd, but it doesn't seem to make a difference. It looks great on a CRT, looks great on your LCD, and it's a fun game. This is not one I think that I ever would have played, so again, another advantage of doing No Quarter, or if you're listening at home playing along with us, is that you get to play games that you wouldn't necessarily walk up to in an arcade and go, you know, I want to play this. And that's how we, you know, I've had a lot of really great experiences doing this because I've played games, I had some really bad ones, Buck Rogers, but where these are not games that I would have played, and I've had a great time going, wow, this is an awesome game. And this isn't quite awesome, but it was really good.
I'm glad you liked it, man. Like I said, it's been a favorite of mine for a long time. And I don't know. I think if you saw this game in the arcade, it might take you a lot of quarters to get good at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So there's definitely, the difficulty ramps up pretty quickly. High school isn't too bad, but once you advance to college and into the pros, man, it gets tough. And I can't imagine getting to Super Bowl. Well, how that was, obviously it's doable. You did it. So, yeah, we'll just keep playing this until you get the high score.
Yes, I'm all for that. So now, in case I don't get the high score, we should probably pick another game for next week as a backup. So,
all right.
If we do that, what would next week's game sound like?
Well, Rob, it sounds like this.
All right, well, that didn't sound like 10-yard fight.
Well, no, I'm afraid not. It's a different title next week, but that doesn't mean you can't keep playing if you don't want to.
All right. Well, I guess I'll come back for one more week then.
Oh, good. Well, again, this is your second show, and I think it went pretty well. So thank you for podcasting with me. Thank you, everyone at home, for listening along.
And hopefully next week, you know what? This is a terrible transition. Never mind. Just cut that off. just cut that off.
I'm going to leave that in.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.